Hello and welcome again to the Wide World of Wargaming Age of Sigmar podcast. Here with me tonight are Jeremy and John, and as always, I am your host, Alex, with the other hosts as well. John and Jeremy and I, we're going to have a discussion today, a focused discussion on a few aspects of the game of Age of Sigmar that might sometimes be swept under the rug. Now it is, it's a pleasure to have this conversation with you two tonight. John, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing absolutely wonderful tonight, Alex. Just relaxing here. Looking forward to having a nice discussion on ethics. It's a topic that is near and dear to my heart. So I'm been looking forward to sitting down with you and Jeremy and kind of talking this out, especially since I've experienced the true cheaty nature of Jeremy on the tabletop. I was shocked and horrified when I played this man. So, Jeremy, you cheating bastard, tell us how you feeling, man.
Feeling pretty good. I'm still enjoying my lovely local Oregon beers and, some scotch as well. Because, if we're going to talk about ethics, you got to have two drinks at once. It's only a way to talk about ethics. But for the most part, I think it's good to have, a almost somewhat renowned and experienced TO talking about this, as well as, like, obviously three somewhat experienced tournament players. And this topic, I think, is going to go, it's going to educate, it's going to make some people realize that, like, not everybody who's a competitive player is a whack player, just because this is a topic everybody deals with in some way or another. But what about you, Alex? What are you drinking tonight?
Oh, I'm just drinking coffee. I'm being all caps Alex, as my partner likes to call it, which I got to admit, it's a great name, so I might be changing a few usernames here and there. But
all caps Alex is not a good it's not a good acronym, because it stands for ACA. So I'm just like
Right. I didn't think of that. I think that this is going to be a really important conversation today. As John and of course Jeremy, you both mentioned, we are going to be having a conversation today about ethics, social contracts of gaming, and overall not being a crappy person when it comes to Age of Sigmar. And this can also apply to any war game, that you're of course face to face in. We want to start off this conversation today with some of the pre-game preparedness, things that tie into sportsmanship at the table before you even get to the table, and how to essentially come to your round, come face to face with your opponent that round, and do so in a positive fashion here. Now, on my end, I can say part of the pregame preparedness can be something as simple as showering.
Right.
Yeah. I know that that can, I think that that was sometimes a rule for Magic the Gathering. That was part of their, rules in some way, shape or form. Not only is it important to do the pregame prepared,
carrying a deodorant. Yeah, it's important.
Yep.
Making sure that the guy behind you who's playing the game behind you doesn't pass out because of your stench. That's important.
Exactly. But outside of that, keeping of course all of your rules, having all of your rules on hand, even if it's just a image on your phone or a printout or something on your tablet, having all of your rules as well as all of your dice, your tape measure, what have you. That to me is what I think of a lot of for the pregame preparedness. But of course, it can go a lot deeper than that. John, what do you usually consider in terms of pregame preparedness?
Sure. I honestly, and I'm gonna pardon the bad puns. So first off, I had to get a little scotch myself. I didn't want to leave Jeremy hanging there, so I got the monkey shoulder out. But other than that, we all have an ethical responsibility as a player coming to a tabletop game, whether it's on a Wednesday night game night or whether it's an RTT on a Saturday or a 2 or 3 day GT. And part of that, as we're saying, is preparedness. Now, preparedness is a lot of things. It's painting my models. It's putting my list together. But it's also designing a list that you are capable of playing. It's knowing what the edge case rules inside of your list are, and not just having the facts ready, read, and understood, maybe even going out and hitting up some forums and reading some of the debate that surrounds a particular rule call, or even sending a question directly to GW or to the TO. You know, if you know that you're going to play an army and there's a kind of a questionable mechanic, message the TO, hey, I'm going to do this. What is your interpretation of these rules? And that'll give the TO a chance to, prior to the event, do his own research and make a decision. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when I get those pre-questions, I will actually send a list out to my participants with, here are the questions that were asked before the event, yeah, and here are all the answers to those questions. So everybody comes in sort of knowing what to expect. So to me, that's the big deal, is that preparedness. Part of it is learning and knowing your rules. A good example of that from my own experience was going into the LVO this year. If you remember, I painted my entire Nurgle army in the 3 weeks before the mm-hmm. LVO. Didn't have a lot of chance to practice it. Complex army with a lot of rules. Knew that if I didn't do something, I was going to just completely either take forever at the table or I was going to play a lot of things wrong. So what I did was I actually sat down and wrote a script for the army that basically said, top of turn, do this, do this, do this, do this. And until I had mastered the army, I basically played to my script every turn. And again, it kept me playing the rules right, doing the right things, and most especially not having to go back and ask for mulligans. So when I think of preparedness and the sort of before the game things, those are the big ones that come to my mind. What about you, Jeremy? What do you consider ahead of time to get ready and make sure that you provide an ethical game to your opponents?
Well, in the days of now, when we have here, and the days of yore, when we used to have to write army lists by ourselves, one of the things I, you know, and this is obviously like above and beyond, like I think anybody's required to do that, but it is very nice, and it saves up time during the initial deployment period of the game, is when you print out, like when we used to give out printouts to army lists, I used to actually go through and explain, like, all, not necessarily the rules of the army, but like the kind of like the gacha mechanics of that army, which is not, you know, I don't really play gacha armies, but for the most part, like, there's a combo mechanics of why, like, these units are important. So I would go through and explain, like, what they did, or what it did, so nobody was, like, shocked at the table. Like, that's how it worked. And in some, you know, that was, you know, above and beyond what I think is, like, you know, what anybody's required to do at the table. But for me, personally speaking, it made me feel better and also sped up the game, right? Because like when your opponent, you know, would ask for, you know, a list, you'd have a good quick reference guide to like what the hell the army did. And that's important. Now, even, you know, everybody, we have Azure up now, we can get War Scrolls very easily. War Scrolls don't really, you know, individually War Scrolls are good, but like the idea is like you don't really understand what the whole mechanic of the army with just those War Scrolls. So that was one of the mechanics preparedness I always made sure I brought along. The other preparedness I like to bring to the table is I want to make sure the person I'm playing with is okay with me drinking at the game if it's allowed. Mostly because I've had some games against people who are not okay with that, and you want to make sure, like, yeah, you do ask that. Are we playing a hobby that does, you know, let you basically for the most of the time fully socially acceptable behavior of drinking at the table while playing. But that is something like most people kind of forget about, is that not your opponents are going to be perfectly okay, especially one who's recovering alcohol.
Yeah.
So another like good and preparedness, at the table when you get there. That's it for me.
Yeah.
So I think you guys covered both like everything else I wanted to cover about, you know, preparedness.
Well, you know, there's actually a few other things too that come to mind when we talk about this type of preparedness. And, I think that it's great to, you know, not only prepare your army, prepare your resources, again, ask the comfort level of your opponent for something like maybe having a drink, whether it be a flask or, you know, if you're actually having a drink, sharing a drink, especially something that happens at LVO.
Yeah, even apologizing the first time you swear to kind of gauge whether or not it's okay to swear.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, yeah. That one I don't do. If you can't handle me swearing, I get the hell out of my event. I'm just kidding.
So for me, I've actually found another thing. I personally like to start almost all my games, or all my games if I can, with a handshake. And that is actually something that has been a roadblock before. You know, there are those people out there, and there's nothing wrong with it, but some people don't feel comfortable, you know, touching a stranger's hands, just interacting with a stranger.
Wait, you've actually had somebody refuse the handshake before a game?
I've had someone flinch, which I'm not, okay. I'm not big and burly.
That's interesting.
So, you know, it's not, I hope I'm not physically intimidated. I certainly don't think I am. But you know, there are some people where maybe their comfort zone isn't quite there. And, you know, sometimes, and it's hard to gauge, honestly, in that moment, I personally did not gauge it at all. So really, you know, just once that happened, you know, totally respectful, you know, I asked then, you know, the guidelines, you know, or not guidelines, but, you know, I asked, you know, where the boundaries were for that, you know, picking up dice, anything like that, if there was a personal space thing, you know, I just was upfront.
Oh yeah, maybe they have a germ issue, you know, low immunity. So that's
yeah, and it can go a lot more than whatever, you know. Right? It can be something that's emotional. It could be something that's you know, is something different. So just like immediately when that happened, I just pressed the pause button. Just told the person, you know, hey, you know, that's totally okay. Don't worry. What are your boundaries? You know, so it doesn't happen from time to time, but I mean, it's, nice. It's bound to happen eventually, right?
Did you pick up Nagash and ask him like where Nagash touched you and you pointed it to a parts of Nagash? Is that what you did?
Well,
yeah, I got to say mocking your opponent might cross that sportsmanship line a little bit too.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah. But also, you know, just coming to the table with, you know, with a smile or at least with a positive demeanor can be very helpful in order to have the sportsmanship. I mean, even at the top tables, that can be very important. And this is still, you know, of course, part of this pregame preparedness is to not be in that zone where, you know, I can't tell you both in 40K or AOS, you know, you come to those top tables at, you know, more often than not a 2-day event or even sometimes a 1-day event. And, you know, your opponents, just, you know, they're not really looking at you. They're not really interaction. They just want to go boom, 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 boom. You know, they just want to play this game and they want to try to beat you as much as they can. And, you know, it's not something that's super common in AOS. So it's not something we really, you know, that's necessarily going to be a significant issue for everyone. But, you know, in those instances, it's good to just come there. Yeah. With maybe a smile on your face or again, with that just kind of non-threatening attitude, which can also maybe play tactically for you, you know,
That's funny. I've never had that problem, but I honestly believe that if I came up to a stoic individual that was just giving me the cold shoulder the whole game, I would probably just talk for 3 hours straight and not even notice.
Yeah, that'd be pretty fantastic.
I was going to mention, though, obviously that it's always bring the right attitude to the game, but also remember what round number it is. Because if you show up to round 3 and try to be overly, you know, chipper, your opponent might not really appreciate it when they're just like, I can't engage with you on this level, man. Like, I'm too dead right now. This is round 3 of day 1.
Yeah, some commiseration goes a long way. Even if you're not dogging, you see your opponent sitting there, you're like, oh, yeah dude, you look like
and actually, know, you know, John also mentioned another thing earlier about, you know, your Nurgle army, your Maggotkin army, having that kind of order of operations for yourself. I think that is definitely part of that pregame preparedness. Oh, yeah. And, you know, some people will just know their army in and out. You know, you can talk to me about my a Night Haunt army and I don't even have to look at my book. And I have my book on hand if you need to know the rule yourself or if you're asking or if you just flat out don't believe me. I have the resources, but I know the order of operations, the way that my army works because I've played it so much. For someone who is either new to an army or for those that don't really have the ability to retain that information too, because there can be a bit of a learning curve. If we know that that's something that we're going to struggle with, that is also super helpful, having a order of operations or a flow chart or even just reminder systems in some way, shape, or form with us can be really helpful. One of my game aids and tokens.
Just little game aids and tokens. When I used to play, my Plague Monks used to have a bunch of one-off abilities. So I made little tokens for each one-off ability, and basically I would leave it on my side flipped one way until the ability was used. I'd flip it over, and then I'd know that ability was gone. So it was just a quick.
Yeah. And even these, even as you mentioned, things like round number, you know, maybe even command point kind of tracking, those type of things. I mean, of course, that can be helpful from secondary products that, that exist as well, but it can also be very helpful. One of my friends who plays 40K, he has a laminated piece of paper he just brings with him to every game, competitive, league, or otherwise. And it gives him the and he's got his army list or some of the more common units he has. He doesn't really change his list very often. And he has, you know, space to put relics in, a tracker for command points that he just circles for both him and his opponent, and all these other things. Things that are not just the actual scoring of the game in order to keep him.
Oh, I've seen that. I like the guys that do it where they track your stuff as well as theirs.
Yeah, and of course it's appreciative and it's also preventative, because then you don't have any sort of issue of whether it's the top or the bottom of a round or, you know, command points or something. So I think it's super helpful. You know, of course, this is, of course, just one part of the overall social contract of gaming. Something that happens, you know, once the game actually starts, things can get dicey sometimes, especially when it comes to you know, rules debates, whether or not it's something significant or even something just super minor and arbitrary. You know, as an example, a lot of armies nowadays have a lot of special rules where that have, you know, the wholly within rule rather than just within. And sometimes there can be some rules arguing about how certain things go one way or the other. You know, it can cause a little bit of a stir with your opponent. John, if there's ever a rules debate that you've had in the past or, you know, moving forward, how have you or how do you typically deal with the rules debate or any sort of, you know, issue that you might have with your opponent in the real or, you know, in that moment?
You know, a year ago or so, had you asked me about rules debates in Age of Sigmar, I would have honestly told you that that's the biggest difference between AOS and 40K as a TO, is that when I run an AOS event, anytime there's a rules question, I literally just bring up the battle tome or the core book, read the rule aloud to everybody. We all go, oh yeah, of course, that's how it works. And we all move on. Whereas 40K has more complex interactions that bring up more uncertain cases, things where you could logically debate both sides of the coin and probably be equal right on either side. Nowadays, with Age of Sigmar, I find that there is a little more complexity of rules, and we do have some more of those edge cases than we used to in the past. So if I'm playing with an opponent, the first thing I like to do, especially if it's a casual game, is read the rules, right? Read the rules, read the facts, look at a designer commentary. Basically, as a team, figure it out, because either my opponent knows how his rules work and he can immediately say, John, it's this page, this fact, this decision, this designer's commentary. Please look at these because I've already looked this over and now you can see the logic that I've come to. Or they have no clue and they're playing it based off of a battle report or some comment on Facebook, in which case we can sit down and do that rules research at the moment and figure it out. And if we can't figure it out, if we still read everything and I say, okay, you know, mm-hmm. what are you doing? What am I doing? What do you believe? What do I believe?
Yeah.
Well, then we dice it off, and dice offs are binding. As a TO, I try to give players that choice. So it'll come up and be like, okay, here's the question. Is it something that you can just show me immediately? And a lot of times a player will have a new battle tome and say, yeah, look, here's the rule right here. Please read it. I read it as a TO. I read a lot of rules. It's clear. I make a decision on the point. If it's not clear, then I say, well, hey, are there any facts? Are there any designer's commentary? What else do you guys know? And then it comes down to, do you want me to take the time to go off and research this? Or do you want me to make a decision at the table? And if I'm going to make a decision at the table, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to have people dice off in an uncertain situation. And again, that dice off will be binding for the tournament. So for me, it's just look up the rules or dice off. That's what it really comes down to. And unfortunately, a lot of times when I make decisions at the table, both players are unhappy with my decision as a TO. And that's when I'm happy as a TO. Like if both players don't like my decision, I probably made the right decision.
Very Solomon-esque.
Yeah.
Like it. The, I was going to mention one additional thing about rules debate. I think that's important. Is how frequent should you bring that up in a game, especially if you have a few conflicts of rules with your opponent. I will say, for the most part, in my experience, like, it's you want to aim for near zero, just period. Because two reasons, and one is the selfish reason, and one is the actual, like, logical reason. The selfish reason is that a lot of events have sportsmanship as, like, a soft scoring, like, mechanic. It's kind of a way to rein in, like, bad behavior effectively in players. And the more you're going to use that rules debate, like, you know, or argue rules, the more likely you're going to get penalized at the end of the game for bad sportsmanship, which I know it doesn't seem necessarily all that fair, but for the most part, it is an important, like, you know, there's no reason to disrupt or challenge your opponent over rules when, especially when you're not even 100% sure your opinion is, like, you got to at least be like 99% sure.
Yeah.
Like, there's something fishy going on.
Well, I think you're talking the difference between rules debate and clarification.
Well, so, in some cases, like, way people ask for rules clarification, and this is like a behavior I've seen a lot of people, is they just challenge you. They challenge the rule more than actually ask for clarification of it first.
Exactly. And that leads to just poor, you know, reading comprehension, which is surprising. You know, I feel that comes to a whole nother issue. Go on, Jeremy.
No, as you said, the second point is time management, right? It's part of the time management dynamic, right? If you're gonna waste a TO's time to make a rules call, or if you're gonna waste the other player's time on a rules debate, you better be prepared to, like, take that into consideration when you make that case. Because I've had players who are very, I will say, put it forward, very gregarious in personalities, or opponents, I should say, that have this. And when they say something of, like, the utmost confidence, it's not a way of, like, necessarily bullying their way into the table. But when they get challenged, they basically, like, close in on themselves and it became very defensive. And then it's one simple rule clarification or challenge that could have taken, like, maybe 20 seconds to clarify ends up taking like 5 minutes or maybe 10 minutes or even worse out of the game. And you got the vice versa mechanic, which you have opponents who are more docile when it comes to rules argument and then feel like, you know, it sits unwell with them how, like, something transpired in the game because of how it was, you know, challenged and so forth. So I guess there's a balance that needs to be met, and nobody has a perfect formula for that, I don't think. But the idea is, like, you want to aim for zero. Like, if you can have zero rules debate, like, you have to ask yourself, is this rules debate valuable for both time and sportsmanship score and also, like, the mental state of both my opponent and me at the end of that rules debate?
Yeah, I think you hit on a big one there, Jeremy, too, is, like, if you're going to debate rules with somebody, you had better be 99% sure. You know, I'm playing against a Skaven player. I play the same army. We might debate on a rule, but the rest of it, when it's rules clarification, I think you have to have a little bit of social grace there. I know myself, I like to say to people, I say, you know, I'm not challenging the rule. I just need a clarification. This is how I learned. And I hope that by saying it that way, it kind of sets people at ease that, no, I'm not accusing you of being a cheater.
And, you know, we all have those strategies, I'm just too. Saying, I mean, I personally, want to understand, if I need to know a rule, whether it is because I genuinely don't know it or because I do want that kind of clarification, I don't say what you say, but I think that that's a really good way to frame it. I normally say, you know, hey, I don't know your army very well, and can I see that rule? You know, I'm not calling you out or anything. I just am legitimately curious. Yep. And usually when that 9 times out of 10, your opponent will show you. And normally when I see it and it's like, ah, crap, he's right, then I tell him, like, that is a fantastic rule. You know, I hand their book back to them and be like, congratulations, that's awesome. You know? Like the entire Fire Slayer battle tome.
Well, you know, just don't do what Alex does, which is ask the same question 6 times in the game. I'm just kidding. Obviously, do that, and it's okay if you do that. But
for me, it was really restating the rule that I already knew existed. I'm like, oh, they're immune to battle shock within 12 of an objective. Sometimes I've had rules issues, yeah, that aren't even just the actual rules themselves, in terms of what we would consider rules, you know, the written abilities of certain things, but rather the rules of scoring or the rules of, you know, not necessarily coherency, but like how many models are on the table. I had a game upper table before where, you know, I was told that I had too many models in my unit, you know, and I told them that was not true, you know, that I had the proper number of models in my unit. They then decided to push on it, and I counted three times each model, or each model in the unit, and I told them, you know, there's X number of models in this unit, and they're all right there in front of you. And then the person pushed back a fourth time, and I pointed to each one individually and looked at him and pointed and said, 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to the number of models in the unit. He then understood.
Did you do a mwah, mwah, mwah between two?
I should have, honestly. But after that, I was a little salty, and maybe it wasn't the best sportsmanship on my part. But after I showed him and he understood, I told him, this is 5 minutes we could have spent rolling dice, you know, because that was ridiculous. But, you know, sometimes the rules debates aren't even the rules themselves. It's just the nature of the game. And I think being able to try to speed that up is really important. Like in that incident, what I could have done to speed up that situation is to just do that final thing at the first time. You know, that would have saved a few minutes right there. But, you know, these type of things happen.
Yeah, what else are you can do? That's just a weird situation, the way you just described it, Alex. I'm not even sure I would deal with that. I probably, that would, unfortunately, those are the kinds of things that unlock my little bit of a snarky side. And so I might end up saying, well, why don't you just count my models until you get the right number? And the right number is 30.
Right? Yeah, actually, that was actually the number.
Yeah, I was hoping it wasn't 10 and you guys are arguing over 10. It's like, I got a finger.
Right.
I'm thinking over and under.
Yeah, but you know, rules debates can be a little tricky. And even in that example in particular leads us to fair play, you know, because in that incident, what I had, not only was that a rules question, but in a way my opponent in that example may not have believed that I was playing straight and narrow. You know, they might have thought I was flexing the rules or even possibly cheating. And of course, with cheating or any sort of fudging of the rules, that can be a whole nother situation. And, you know, with wargaming, it does happen from time to time, whether it's intentional or not. And how to go about curbing that type of situation with your opponent can be very important. And, you know, John, you know, being a TO for not just one day events, but even 2 day events, you know, GTs like Winter Wars or BAO, these type of things do happen, whether it is cheating or fair play. But what's your take on that?
Right. Well, you know, and it's one of these things. I think cheating in particular has to be broken down into, you know, intentional cheating, which is pretty egregious, and then what I would call unintentional cheating. And I would argue that probably every person who plays this type of gaming, whether or not it's every single game or every other game, engages in some unintentional cheating at some point or another, whether it's an overmeasured model or a misinterpreted rule or a missed coherency, it happens, right? So that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about intentional rules, intentional cheating and that kind of stuff. And usually that's people misplaying rules or misplaying combos. When I ask somebody about, you know, they're trying a tricky combo and I say, hey, could you show me the rules on that real quick? How does that work? And if they don't, you know how to find it in their book, I'm immediately suspicious because, again, I expect that if you have tricky combos or edge cases you're going to try and pull off during the game, that you should have been very familiar with the rules of that and literally planning to, shall we say, explain those to your opponent. You know, there's a lot of things in my armies that I pretty much know that as soon as I do this, I had better be ready to show somebody what's going on. And then on the other side of that is a little bit of what I call, you know, fair play. And what is fair play? It's It's, you know, how hard do you push against a cocked die? It's when do you call your own cocked die? It's like, you know, my dice lands on a little piece of a felt area terrain and the roll is favorable to me, so I keep it, and it's not favorable to me, and I pick it up and call it cocked die. No, you got to be consistent. So that's part of fair play. It's measurement. You know, I want to get across the board, so am I setting up at 11 and a half inches or 12 and a half inches? Am I moving my models 5.5 inches on a 6-inch move or 6.5 inches? And I will tell you that I am one that I pay very close attention to movement and measuring. Mm-hmm. Go figure. I might be do that professionally, so it's kind of in the center of my mind and all that. But what I've done is I kind of get tired of arguing with people about how they move and measure things. And so I'm a very tight mover of my models. I always try to move a little short until I see my opponent isn't. And then I basically will try to match however much they overmeasure. So if you're going 6.25 with each of your 6-inch moves, you better expect I got 6.25 coming. So I do have a whole thing of where I try to be reciprocal to how my opponent is playing the game. I'm basically going to play it the same way, and not in a negative way, but really in a let's play the same game on the same table and still figure out who the best general is.
That's interesting. So, you know, I like how in my mind, the way that that works is, you know, if they keep on consistently making their movements 6.25 inches or 6.5 inches, then in that time, in that space, on that table, in that universe, in that area, six inches is now 6.5 inches. So, exactly. You know,
all fair. Balance.
Yeah.
And there is one thing I will say, and this is gather around, kiddos. Let me tell you a story of the olden days. I've played against an opponent like where measuring was his forte, where he was accurate at measuring distances. But one of the things he did, which was I would say egregiously on the edges of cheating, was that he would basically move the models in his unit. And then he didn't like the move, so he would go back and move them back, you know, and was precise in measurement. Like, he would measure, like, the distance back and forth. And back in those days of, you know, like, that model, which was, like, the important model of the unit, because leader, A, sergeant, whatever, which was, like, in the back of the unit before, after, you know, doing this once or twice, all of a sudden finds itself in the front of the unit. And then, like, when he makes its move, the move he actually wants to make at the end of the move he commits to, that guy is now, instead of traveling his distance, he traveled, like, you know, 2x that distance, effectively, because of all of his shuffling and that he did with that model. So it's important to, like, use dice to mark, like, or where you want the unit to go, and just keep an eye out for, like, players would like to, you know, take backseat movement they make on the table. You should always allow your opponent to take a backseat, like a mulligan on a move on a unit. It's not like, it's not chess. We're not playing chess here. And once you let go of the piece, it's not like
final. I don't even think it says that anywhere in the rules.
But you want to, you know, caveat, like, you know, that behavior can happen. And, you know, it's important to, it's okay to say something about it. Like, don't feel like you know, it's one of those things like, hey, you know, you can broach it nicely. Like, I think that model was actually, 6 inches backwards. Like, it was not, you know, it wasn't that close to my unit or the move you were trying.
Yeah, if you have a little realpolitik or a little bit of sense of humor, you can usually broach these topics without offending anybody. And if you don't and can't, then I recommend that you lower your voice and say it in as unemotional a way as possible, but still make your statement known. And, you know, one of the more common ones for me is I'll after deployment in the first couple moves, I'll see somebody who is all of a sudden 3 inches off my line. It's like, wait a second. If we add up all the numbers, you should be 8 to 12 inches away. You could not have gotten this far. Yeah. So, you know, perhaps we add the numbers up and move you back to where you should. I know you're excited. I know you want to get into the game, but.
Yeah.
You know. What you don't do, though, is you don't pick up that guy's model.
Unless you have a rule that says you can. Unless there's a rule that says you can.
No, I think the most I would do on that is a lot of us have a 3-inch measurement device. And I will slide that 3-inch measurement device in front of my models and kind of bump you back a little bit or hand it over to you. I'll maybe show one and then let the guy handle the rest.
Now, you know, when it comes to this type of situation, you know, it is always important to also kind of put in line not only the like how important it is to actually bring up this subject too. You know, I myself can't live in a I can't have the table universe in that round in that moment be 6.5 inches. Like which can sometimes slow the game down. You know, I'm like very meticulous on making sure that all my methods are accurate, and I am going to completely hold my opponent accountable to that as well. But what really makes me go crazy, and I've been trying my best to manage how I do this, is the smaller things like movements between models that I'm like if I have models that are getting charged and they're moving through my models, or when someone like puts their hero in front of a unit and that hero doesn't have fly, and then they move their other army around, you know, as though it had fly. And more often than not, in those type of situations, the models could actually get to their final destination easily, but the order of operations has to be very distinct, you know, and that, as well as consolidation, like improper consolidation, I start like becoming very finicky with. But depending on the,
I'm super finicky about consolidation too. To me, the proper piling in combat is the heart of how this game works. And I see people doing it so poorly, or honestly, cheating in their favor by the way they pile in combat. Is one of the more irksome things.
Yeah, and I agree. And so that's the point I'm trying to make, is that in those type of instances, I can sometimes allow for you know, someone moving their model and then moving it back. And I think all of us are guilty of doing that at least once, especially with like an HQ, you know, a hero choice model. And I can tell you that happened to me, I think even in a game against Jeremy once, where I moved a Spirit Torment one direction, then put him back, then put him in another direction. And then I had done that to the point where, who knows, maybe Jeremy was even talking about me in that instance, where I was like, oh, and in those type of situations when I've done that, I've just been like, okay, I'm just going to put the model back to the very first movement I had, and I'm just going to deal with it. I'm not going
to. Don't worry.
Oh, no.
I know you wouldn't cheat me like that.
So in that instance, I always just go back to the very first model. But in those other situations where, the consolidation can matter significantly, or a hero doesn't have fly and can't move over the stuff that it's moving over, I want to say that I'm always meticulous and saying, no, you can't do that. But I have found myself allowing it and just watching it happen in games that – like the player may not be fully experienced in the game, and I'm just kind of giving them that, you know, which I don't, which becomes a whole nother issue, because is it healthy to let that person, to not call that person out on that situation and have them continue that bad habit? Or is it good to tell them it now?
Yeah. It goes back to the concept we had talked earlier. Like, is it like worth having this argument over something now or not? But I was going to mention one of the crucial component that is important is like, you should feel empowered at the table if you think something is not right or not fair, to bring it up without feeling like you're going to get penalized for talking about it. I know we talked earlier about like, you know, you want to weigh in, but you should always feel empowered to do, to ask that question. I'll give you a context. One of the big things, we didn't really talk about this earlier in terms of cheating, is like when people roll dice, especially some of the Sigmar dice, because it takes a bit. So for some folks, it takes a bit to get used to like what the you know, the size of the dice are actually mean, aka like the Deepkin dice, aka the Gitz dice, or even the Fire Slayer dice.
Right. Like when you and I played, Jeremy, right? What I tell you at the end of the game, I had no idea what anything you rolled during the game was, because I didn't know what your dice read.
Yep. Yeah. And this goes into what I was exactly saying, is it's okay to ask your opponent when they're rolling dice before they pick up to roll, like, you know, after they roll the hit, to like pause so you can look at the number and actually, because I think we've all had those players who play very quickly in a dice roll and sometimes are inconsistent about how they pick up dice too, which is, I try to pick up always misses first misses. And then pick up
hits. I never trust a person who picks
yeah.
up hits.
Yeah.
Right. Mostly because it allows my opponent the ability to count mm-hmm. the dice that hit while I'm picking up misses. And some players like to do the opposite. And it's okay to say to that guy or that, you know, woman across the table, give me a second. I need to look at, like, I just want to count up, like, the hits. And I also want to, you know, get accounted to your way you roll dice. Well, and that's important.
Well, you know,
feel free to.
I think that's very reasonable as well. And I got to say, I always pick up my failed. Yeah. I will almost always. And then before I try to roll my dice again, you know, if it's happened a few times where someone says, oh, there was a two or there was a three in there, then I go, okay, you know, from then on, you know, for the round two, I just double check. I'm like, does this look good to you before rolling the dice? You know, between say hits and wounds, but
oh, you mean that's for the dice and not you? Oh man, I mean, I'm misunderstanding that question every time.
Just the dice rolls themselves. The moment my opponent starts taking those successes rather than the fails, I got to say that's an immediate kind of red flag for me, where I'm like, oh, I have to pay a lot of attention to this game now.
Got to pay a lot of attention. Yeah. And then there's the other little weird ones, like the guys that, you know, count up the hits, but then grab another pile of dice. So they're like picking up the misses, but counting the hits. I don't know if you've seen them. They're like, oh, I've got six hits. And then they pick up six of the misses and push the pile out of the way and roll those. I've seen some pretty bizarre handling when, in my mind, like when I first started in tabletop wargaming, like the old guys I played with literally told me, like, when you roll dice, you do it this way. You declare what you're trying to get. Mm-hmm. You let the dice go out. You pick up the things that are misses. You know, you do your re-rolls. You know, it's like there's a whole order of how you do it. Like, literally, roll the dice, pick up the ones I'm going to re-roll those, pull out the misses, set the hits aside, count out how many. I see 12 hits. Your opponent looks, yes, oh, wait, is that a one in there? Oh, shit, I missed one, okay? And you kind of do that, and maybe it's not the fastest, and we are trying to speed things up, but I'll tell you what, just being consistent at a pace where nobody's going to argue will actually be faster than weird stuff where
totally
we have to
agree.
Argue and go back and forth.
You know, even with these you know, type of situations that do occur, it's really important to not only take a look at the dice, but also even talk about things that are a little bit more common nowadays in this day and age. And that actually leads me to ask you guys about dice apps. You know, there are a lot of dice apps out there, and you know, I know a lot of. Yes,
there's only one dice.
This is where I'm going. So, you know, there is Combat Dice, which is iOS only. I don't even know if it's still on sale, but it was the one that Games Workshop had supported, and it still has Games Workshop logo all over it. I personally have that on my iPad, and especially in tournament play, you know, I personally don't really use it unless I have to take a million saves against like Daughters of Cain or something. But I have always offered my opponent, especially when my opponent is rolling like 60 plus dice, I always ask them, do you want to use my dice app? And, you know, like our good friend Michael Schwartz, he was using my dice app all over most of the times he and I have played in a tournament setting, because he has just a weight of dice and it would just take forever to play the game.
Well, and he's a bit of a master at that dice app too. You know, he started using it when a while back, and he and I had some discussion, and he's basically spent time figuring out how to best use it. I tell you what, if you're ever at a tournament and you want to learn how to use that dice app better, spend 5 minutes with that guy, because he's who I turn to for advice with it. And that said, you know, like myself, I try to use the dice app, and like with my Plague Monks and stuff, it's actually really difficult to use because of all the different breakouts on the dice. And so sometimes a dice app, you know, isn't necessarily the way to go on something like that. But if it's not the dice app, then it's about speeding up how you manage your dice. You know, it's about not having 16 different colors of weird dice. It's about having dice in colored blocks that match the shooting of a unit. Yep. I have a unit of eels that can do maximum of 16 shots. I have 16 dice. I have a unit of thralls that can do 20 attacks. I have 20 dice in a different color for them. So that kind of stuff. And you guys have seen me with my Skaven. Recently I've been using those big giant Skaven dice. I like them because they're easy to read, but they're not as fast as the dice I used to use, which were my little green dice, where basically I spent the whole game putting them into blocks of 10. so that I'm always ready to pick up, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 80, 90 dice and roll them. And now I'm going to add one more thing for you that don't want to use apps. Bring a cup. Bring a damn cup. Yeah. Are you rolling more than 10 dice at once? Bring a damn cup.
That leads me to something I got to say. This was not Age of Sigmar. This is 40K, but this fits hand in hand with this type of situation. A few years ago, I was at a tournament, a 40K tournament, and I was fighting against an opponent that had just like a mixed Imperial army, and he was doing an ability with his guardsmen where he was just shooting, I believe it was on the upwards of 160 shots he was shooting at me from one unit alone. And so I saw his he had carried his army not in a display tray, but in a Tupperware container. And I asked him, how many dice do you have on you? He's like, this is 120 dice. I said, cool. What I recommend, because he didn't have a cup, is he had like a few like casualties in one of his Tupperware containers. I said, can we take the casualties out of one Tupperware container? Can we put all of your dice in the other Tupperware container? You shake it up, you throw it in the empty Tupperware container, and then we sort out your hits and wounds. And he agreed to it, but then later I saw his sportsmanship card and he did not score me high, which was funny because that was one of the fastest methods he could have done 160 dice all at once.
Well, you don't know it was because of the dice. Maybe he was just, you know, pissed because
he met Iron Alex at the table and that was that.
That ACA guy. I think, John, you bring up a really good point, too. It is, and even in that example as well, it's all about time management. And, you know, with time management, there are ways that we've even talked about just previously in this discussion, you know, how we can speed up this time, talking, you know, making these movements, trying to avoid rules debates, and just playing with everything out in the open, not being sketchy, not being weird with your game or your dice rolls, and also trying to be a reasonable player when it comes to these rules. Time management can be a lot more than just that. John and Jeremy, like, what are some strategies that you guys might be able to share to our listeners in order to kind of speed up the game?
Sure. Well, one thing is know your rules, know your list. If you're not good at memorizing things, have a cheat sheet, have a script, have something set out. I'm really liking the unit cards nowadays. If any of you guys have actually played against me at a tournament, usually at tournaments, I have a little like a report folder, a little plastic binder with the sleeves in it. And I'll have a copy of all my war scrolls in there. I'll have taken photocopies of the special rules from the front of my book, lists of spells, my actual army list, and any other reference materials I might need are contained in that binder. I'll tell you, the binder I put together for my wife has half the rules for Age of Sigmar and half her battle tome in it. Like, my intention is that I should be able to play my entire game out of that folder. And then outside of the knowing your rules and printing it and having all that handy, the game aids help a lot just in remembering things. Rely on your opponent to help you. You got a lot of dice, have them load the dice into your hands, have them help you pick out the misses, these kinds of things. And then the last thing I touched on already is just my dice management. I learned it by watching the GW live stream where they were playing some Skaven, and this player was putting all his dice into blocks of 10, and then one block of 10 is a different color. So if I have to do 66 rolls, I grab six blocks of 10 and six out of the other color, roll those, and then in between my rolls, I'm putting all my dice back into blocks of 10, which, once you start doing those blocks of 10, you by sight will know 10 dice and pull them in pretty quick. So to me, it's knowing the rules, having a cheat sheet, and managing your dice. That's it.
Yeah, I was going to, you know, John described the basics, I would say, and that and more, you know, outside of basics, I would say almost like borderline requirements, I would think, to if you want to show up to a table and be competitive and on time in terms of your game. The additional piece I would add is like for the extra mile, it's obviously you can't really do that on round one, but like for round two, three, and you know, four and five in a tournament, most of the time there'll be a break between rounds. It's always good, thankfully, because now we play a game where, you know, if through BCP the lists are posted up online for the most events and war scrolls are readily available on Azure, just look up like what the rules of your opponent's army does. Like, right, if you haven't already spent some intimate time and late, you know, with the Age of Sigmar app, you know, can't, you know, some fire, like in a smoking jacket, reading up battle tomes. Yeah, like just like read up some like your opponent's army's like rules, so you don't, you know, waste times in the game, like basically like, you know, having doubts about the rules they have because you didn't bother to read them in the first place. So, you know, it's one of those like kind of, you know, advice I would recommend to just, you know, you're saving maybe, you know, 3 to 4 minutes in the game, but that could make a huge difference. You know, I've had lots of games in Age of Sigmar that only lasted 3 turns, as much as I've had games that last 5 turns and end like, you know, an hour and a half early, basically. So it's important to maximize all the opportunities of time you can. Especially if we want to make sure armies like Gitz or Horde-like armies are still like in the meta.
Yeah. Not only is it important to, as you mentioned before, not only know your own rules in and out, but also know your, you know, if you have the time, if you have the capacity, you know, knowing your opponent's rules. I mean, you know, especially if you play with a lot of friends, you know, you start to get to know their rules pretty quickly, or at least I really hope you do. You know, that's definitely very helpful as well. When we look at the idea of, you know, kind of personal accountability with speeding up your game is also, you know, keeping some events are just going to naturally have time clocks. You know, John's BAO tournament certainly had time clocks. You know, not all events will have them, but if you have one yourself, I personally have one myself, that can be very helpful in order to try to, if you know you're struggling with a new, maybe it's a new army, maybe it's an army that is, you know, just, you know, let's say you're transitioning from Beastclaw Raiders to Gloomspite Gitz. Well, there's a whole lot, there's a big difference in the model count in that, those armies. So you might have a little bit of a time getting used to it.
And it might not be a chess clock, because you do have to actually teach yourself how to use a chess clock as well. And you know that experience. It might just be a regular timer. And nowadays, there's even a timer in BCP. Yeah. Or you could set an alarm where your phone, you know, every 15 minutes it vibrates in your pocket.
Yeah, you could say, hey, Siri, or hey, Google, set a timer for 2.5 hours, you know. That's a great idea. Oh, you know what? My phone literally just did that.
It's that easy.
And now, one last thing to touch on, though. Time management. It's okay to ask your opponent to play faster if you think like you're being slow.
Yeah, or at least make comment on the time. Hey, it looks like we're getting low on time here. You know, we better pick this up. That kind of stuff. And by the as a TO, let me throw in there to kind of add to what Jeremy just said. I don't want to hear about how your opponent slow played you. Actually, you can fuck off in between rounds to tell me that. Because if your opponent is slow playing you, you better tag me at least with an hour left in your round so that I can do something about it. Apportion time, watch the slow play, advise somebody, whatever is required, but don't wait until it's too late to do something about it. Hell, I know if my opponent's slow in the first half hour, 45 minutes, that's when I'm going to let the TO know. And if they're that slow, you got plenty of time to walk away and talk to the TO about it.
Yeah. Time management then, for you. I do want to approach the subject of
time management for yourself again. So. You know, with those armies where you know you might struggle, you know, like a year ago I had a Legion army with, you know, like 80 skeletons. You know, that is a hard, you know, that's a lot of models. And in order to play well, you know, you're going to have to play fast. Using every tool at your disposal, whether it is, like we talked about earlier, you know, a measurement tool, a measurement device, a 3-inch device, if you will. You know, or even the, you know, those MDF or plastic, you know, base holders, you know, those base templates where you can already start your game in deployment with your army in a straight line or in a group. And it's, you know, it's almost like the old Warhammer Fantasy Battle trays where you just move the units forward, you know, being able to just move a few of them the way you want to go and then have the rest of the templated, you know, models go in the direction, just the general direction, that speeds the game up a lot. And you don't necessarily have to stack. Exactly.
And being forgiving of your opponent when they have
really,
to move like that, too.
Prevent you from playing too tactically. You still have a lot of tactic flexibility to really just put a few models exactly where you absolutely need to put them. But if you have those giant units where not every model necessarily is going to have to be well thought out about where you're going to place it, you know, definitely use these type of tools. Use the things that are available to you, you know, the tools in the toolbox. Yeah. But, you know, with that too, there is one final thing that we do want to broach, and we do want to approach the subject of intent. Now, intent isn't something that hasn't come up as a significant issue in, you know, most events that I've seen that have been, you know, major. But of course, there are a few infamous events, especially in 40K, especially at one of the biggest 40K events, where intent drew a lot of controversy. Of course, intent is important to let your opponent know, I plan on doing this, or, hey, you know, I'm always going to do first of the Mortox command ability at the start of my hero phase. So just letting you know. Or, you know, Jeremy, you yourself told me at Beria Open when you slapped me around a little bit, you just said, you know, my Uruk Runefather is always going to shake his stick. Just that's my intention. And I got it, you know. But when it comes to intent, sometimes that can be a little bit of a tricky situation, at least to either remember to remind your opponent about your intent, or to even just make sure that they do that themselves. John, Jeremy, how outside of the situations that I've mentioned, what are your thoughts on intent?
Sure, I think that actually that intent is one of the most important things that we can do to, one, make sure that we have a fair game, and two, to actually speed the game up. And when I think of intent, I think of it as largely in the movement phase. I am moving this model, and my intent is to be exactly 18 inches from this other model so that I can shoot my gun. It is my intention to move this unit exactly 3 inches away from your unit here. Or you move and you say, okay, I'm intending to make a charge, then I believe that I am 9 inches away from your unit. And you do these things before you roll the dice. You get that agreement from your opponent of what you intend to do. So then when the dice are rolled, or when it's on the edge, and when everybody's passions are up a minute later, you've already agreed on it. So it's not, I'm going to micromeasure you now that I'm making the charge. It's no, I'm intending for these to be exactly 8 inches away. We agree that I will have to roll 8 inches to make this charge. You agree, I agree, boom.
Done. Yeah.
And now that, I don't have to precision position anything.
Go on.
I got a big pile of models there, right? So I'm sorry. And so me, that's the big thing. And then the other side of intent, which I think people don't often think of, and I mentioned it earlier, is in rolling. And it's every time you roll the dice, saying what you intend to get. And there's two sides of that. One, it drills into your opponent what you're looking for. And for your more experienced opponents, it helps them double check that you got things right. And so that, to me, that's intent. What do you think when you hear the word intent, Jeremy?
And when I hear the word intent, the way I use it most of the games is when, before I move a unit, I will, you know, clearly there's a reason why I am moving this unit before I actually pick up the models. So I measure the distance. I tell my opponent, look, like, I am trying to get X amount of models within the objective range. And these are the models that are going to be, like, these are obviously the models in range of that. So they clearly know before I actually move the models, that's like, and we measured it out, and they can clearly see that's the amount of models. That's my intent. And they're cool with it. We don't bother going at the end of the turn to go, like, you know, double check like the distance and the objective. Usually, like, they, you know, we clearly are okay with that. The other one is for same thing, movement, and then saying like, okay, I'm exactly this far away from this unit. That means I need this dice roll to make the charge. When I do roll the charge in the movement phase, and that way, you know, clearly defined, everybody's good. No need for like basically back and forth measuring at like the crucial time. Because one of the things like most people want to check, you know, want to slow down the game to check something, it's when they think they're caught by surprise about something. So if you're making it apparent to them like a few minutes before the actual dice roll actually happens, they're usually, like, there's no problem. The last thing about intent I will say though, is that if you have an opponent who's okay, like totally receptive to you, basically making like these kind of call outs during the turn, and then makes you double check later in the game, in the round, as if like the intent was not agreed upon as a social contract, you're told, once again, I'll make, you know, I'll reiterate this in the previous podcast. Now you can call me. I will find where they live and punch them in the dick.
Nice. So,
it's, you know, I won't advertise my number, but if you do get it and that happens to you, just call me. All right. And if it's just, there is no need in the wargaming space for that kind of shitty attitude. So,
yeah, it's black back, no take backs when it comes to that stuff. Yeah. If we agree on intent, that's what's going to happen on the table.
Yep.
And the same with rules calls and all those things. Like if we have a discussion on round one and we decide that something works a certain way, right or wrong, I don't want to hear about it later. Like if on turn three, you decide to call the TO, we're like, hey man, what about, and I'm like, hey, we already decided on turn one, dude. So that's how it is for the game. Shut the hell up.
Yeah. You know? Really, when it comes to intent too, my biggest thing is, because I always just try to be very upfront about my rules and I try to just understand my opponent's rules as well. It does come down to a few of those things that Jeremy had mentioned, just speed up the game. Like a great example is if someone's trying to speed up the game and they're playing, you know, a Night Haunt army or a Fire Slayer's army that's coming up from the ground, or even especially a Stormcast army, you know, put the models where you're going to put them. And if they're, you know, oftentimes they can be really good about it and say, hey, I'm not at the end of my turn yet, but I'm going to, at the end of the movement, put my models over here. And they maybe put the models over there and they ask me politely, hey, can you make sure that they're 9 inches away? And I'll do that. And I'll be like, do you want them exactly 9 inches? And they'll say, sure. And I'm like, okay, cool. Not a problem. Or even if they put them there and it's clearly like 7 inches or clearly less than nine and they're doing a deep strike, then I already know, hey, they're 9 inches away, right? And they go, yeah. And so I know if they, you know, they don't have a 7-inch charge, of course. They have a 9-inch charge. And when we get to that point, we get there. You know, if they pass their charge, perfect. If they don't, then you better put them back to where they should be. And that happens really in other missions where, you know, there's so all the missions are in the, or all the objectives are in the middle of the table. You know, when there's so many combats going on at the same time, sometimes a unit retreats or a unit's coming really close to a multi-unit combat and they may be 2 inches away by accident when the opponent moves there. Or, you know, if you have a lot of models and you're just moving them there and you're obviously going to get the charge off, you know, you can just tell your opponent, you know, hey, these are 3 inches away. Do we agree they're exactly 3? And you know, then you can just go set. Cool. You roll snake eyes. You know,
everything's
you're not
true. You said, man,
you're not.
Well, it's been a great discussion. I tell you what, I was really looking forward to us digging into a nice ethics discussion. I tell you what, for every point, Jeremy, that you made, I felt like we could have talked another hour behind that. Alex, I'm looking forward to the next time we get together and having a drink and continuing a discussion of some of the stuff that you said, but. What do you think, guys? Are we kind of hitting the end of this one for now and pick it up on another day?
Oh, yeah. I think that this has been a really helpful, constructive conversation. And I do hope our listeners do enjoy
they're not only going to
take some quick tips.
They're going to walk away a better player. You know, just obviously, you know, if you listen to my lovely soothing voice about ethics, you're going to come back an ethical man. If you're not before. anyway.
That's right. Ethics are not morality, and I'm a very ethical person. Morality is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
I'll be back to the philosophers.
Exactly. Yeah, so we hope you guys enjoyed this episode tonight. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcast and like us on Facebook, The Wide World of Wargaming. We do hope to see you again soon, and have a good night.
Night, everyone.
Have a good night.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.